This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN, from RDS, from MSGs, our great friend of this program, Marty Biron, joins us. Marty, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing over there?
Doing very well, Marty. How are you?
I'm doing great. Lots of fun hockey lately, and some games that, the football score would be less, so it's exciting, not
for goalies,
but it's
still
exciting.
Absolutely. The last night in Long Island between the Rangers and the Islanders, not the Rangers, pardon me, the Islanders and the Red Wings, that was an entertaining 7-6 game, scores you don't typically see, but it is, as we get into stretch drive time and the trade deadline only a couple weeks away, it is an entertaining time in the hockey world. Marty, you know, wanted to talk about the trade deadline, and a lot of these teams are in playoff races. What's it like being in the dressing room right now of a team that is, you know, a pretty good hockey team? Let's say the Winnipeg Jets. They have playoff aspirations, lengthy playoff aspirations. What's it like being in a dressing room right now when you're a couple weeks away from the trade deadline? There's a little bit of uncertainty. You're not sure what your team is going to do, if anything. Is this an exciting time for a player?
It's mostly exciting if you're competing for a top playoff spot, if you expect and think that you will be a contender in the playoffs. So I think that the main core of the team is all set. They know they're going to be sticking around. And that if you're going to acquire pieces, it's mostly going to be with either prospects or draft picks being traded away. So that usually doesn't affect much of your actual roster. When you're a team that's on the selling side of things, then it gets a little bit more stressful. I remember my first couple of years, like 2001, 2002, cell phones were just kind of coming out, right? Like, cell phones had been out for maybe 4 or 5 years. Not everybody had a cell phone, but we had a couple of guys, like at three-game meal or at lunch, their cell phones were on the table. 18 years later, everybody's cell phone is on the table. But back then, your cell phone was in your car or in your pocket, but some guys had it on the table waiting for a phone call, nervous that they were going to get traded or hoping they were going to get traded. So it gets very nerve-wracking if you're a team that's in a selling mode. I got traded at the deadline. I got traded, from the Sabres to the Flyers. The Sabres were trying to get reinforcement, that year. They were a President's Trophy winning team. So the backup goalie was me, kind of was the one that got shipped out. And so that's usually what to expect. Backup goalies, maybe prospects or draft picks are the ones that go when you're a contending team.
Marty, over the years, we've asked you about your former teammate, Henrik Lundqvist, many times. And, you know, with the Rangers, where they are in the standings, you know, I guess the question for you is, Henrik Lundqvist is a consummate professional, but do you think it's tough for him right now? I mean, he's used to being in the playoffs year after year, and it looks like, even though there is still a chance the Rangers get into the playoffs, it looks like, you know, the team is about to hit the rebuild button.
Well, yeah, the Rangers need to rebuild, retool. Some teams are capable of doing it on the fly. Some teams need a complete breakdown, a tear down to be able to do it. And I think Lundqvist is hoping that the Rangers can do it on the fly. His comments 2 weeks ago were, I want to play for one organization. I want to stay here in New York with the Rangers. I want to see it through. He's a competitor, though, and he wouldn't be who he is and the type of athlete that he is if he wasn't a competitor. So winning is obviously the number one priority. But I think that it comes a point in your life when you're 35, you are looking around and saying, okay, well, I've got my wife, my kids, my family, my organization, the my second family, right, my hockey family, the family that gave me a chance coming out of the 04-05 lockout to play in the NHL and then gave me a chance to be a number one goaltender and go on. So, yeah, if you're Henrik Lundqvist, you're a competitor and you want to win, but I think it comes a point where you got to make a decision. And I think knowing his love for New York, his love for the organization, he's going to do everything and anything he can to help the rebuild and the retool and use that competitive nature that he's got for good, not to pout and be negative and want to be shipped out of town. I don't see that happening.
Marty, last night in the press box, I was asked to articulate what goaltender interference was. And I, you know what, to be honest with you, I was completely incapable because I'm not sure. You're a former NHL goalie. What's your view right now of the goalie interference situation in the NHL?
You know what? Obviously, in Winnipeg, it's been at the forefront of things with James Neal breaking
yep.
the stick in Hellebuck's face. Now, I'll be honest with you, and I may get a lot of flack for it. I thought that was a good goal. I thought that, if anything, on that goal, it should have been a slashing penalty on James Neal because you can't hit the goaltender like that. But nothing that he did interfered with the actual process of scoring the goal. The puck was behind Hellebuck. He didn't know where the puck was, and it was loose, and it didn't involve anything that was interference on the actual goal. But the referees can't go back and say, oh, man, we really missed a penalty on this play. We got to call that a no goal. They've got to be able to separate, one from the other. So I think that the league is doing the right thing right now, is let the referees make the call on the ice. And then unless there's something really obvious that happened that you missed, then stick with your call on the ice. The video challenge and the video replay for goaltender interference is for obvious non-call. Do I think that the Jake Allen getting pushed out of the net by two Boston Bruins should have been overturned? Yeah, obviously, there's going to be some mistakes being made. I thought Jake Allen had no chance to make the save and come back. If the puck goes in the net directly on that play, I think it should have been allowed. But because it didn't go in, it came back, and then somebody shut it in 3 seconds later. That's where the line is. But I am on board with what the league is trying to do. Last night you talked about the Detroit-New York Islanders game. Doug Waite was furious when the Detroit Red Wings made it 6-6 at the end of the game. He thought it should have been goaltender interference. He's saying Yarolak couldn't move. But really, you look at the whole play, it's a pass back door that Yaroslav Halak didn't even see there was a player back door. He didn't even try to move. He just went down in the butterfly thinking it was going to be a shot on net. Was there a little contact? Yeah. Was it in the crease? Yeah, but he didn't interfere with the actual process of the goal being scored. So I'm all good with that as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Our guest is Marty Biron. You know him as a TSN RDS and MSG hockey analyst.
Now, Marty, sticking, with the goalie interference issue, and this is a hot topic, especially in Winnipeg here, but also across the league. As a former goaltender yourself, do you think you're going to start to see goaltenders get a little bit aggressive knowing that, some of these calls aren't being made?
Well, did you see the other day when Keith Kincaid got bumped in Pittsburgh and then Sidney Crosby shot the puck right off his head and into the net? I actually thought Keith Kincaid tried to settle the contact and embellish the contact, and he actually got caught. The referee, luckily for Kincaid, the referees called it a no-goal on the ice after their little referee conference, and, again, what was the call on the ice? It was a no goal. So then you have to have obvious video evidence to be able to overturn it. There was no such thing. They decided it was a non-goal. But I would send a warning to the goalies. Listen, the referees are no dummies. They know which goalies like to dive or like to embellish contact, and they know which goalies kind of stay in there and fight it through. So, you know what? I think that referees in the heat of the moment sometimes know, well, this is a goalie that likes to dive. I'm going to, you know, allow the goal because I think he was just trying to embellish the contact. And this will get built over years. It's not just one instance, but it's, you know, after 2, 3, 4 years of being in the league where, you know, you've had the same referee, you know, 15, 20 times, now they get to know what you're really about. So goalies have got to be careful. If they start embellishing and diving and playing into those kind of games, they may not get the benefit of the doubt. The same way players like Brad Marchand and, you know, like those guys don't get the benefit of the doubt usually when it comes to calls on the ice.
You know, Marty, speaking of goalies being careful, here in Winnipeg, they've lost Steve Mason to a concussion in practice and now Michael Hutchinson to a concussion in practice. How unusual is that to see your goalies going down, you know, in twice in a season to a concussion? Now, do you think it's more because there's a greater sensitivity to a concussion than there ever was before?
I think that's part of it. I think there's more of a education towards the players and the trainers and the coaches staff to recognize and know when a goaltender is not feeling good and dealing with a concussion. So that is one thing. Two, I think that you're asking a lot of the coaches, a lot of the players to show more intensity during practice, to show battle drills, to drive to the net, and there may be more contact. And three, and I think this is, you know, I didn't care as a goaltender. Guys tried to score goals. If they hit me in the face, you know, so what? They're trying to get better. But if you go back 20 years ago, a lot of goalies, respected goalies, if you shot the puck higher than 3 feet off the ice, you may get a slashing by the goaltender because they were saying, keep it down. I don't want to get hit in the shoulder. I don't want to get hit in the face. But I think that is old school. It's changed a lot now. I remember my 1 year with the Philadelphia Flyers, I think I changed cage on my mask like 10 times in the year because I got hit in practice in the face so many times. But, it's just new sticks, quicker shots, guys starting to be more precise so they don't just waste shots on nets and I'm just going to hit the goalie in the pad. They're actually trying to score in practice. Sometimes it can be a result of guys getting shots in the head too many times as well. So there's a few different reasons for that.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. Marty Biron, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Jake Allen played net last night for the St. Louis Blues. And Jake Allen has sort of had an up-and-down season. He's definitely had more struggles than the Blues would expect. And this is coming off a year last year that he had struggles in the regular season and then picked it up towards the end and then had a decent playoff run. From your expert eye, Marty, what do you see when you watch Jake Allen playing goal for the St. Louis Blues?
I see a goalie that's really searching to find what type of goaltender he is. And it's been like that for a while. He's the technical goaltender that plays the angles and really is a structured goalie, very simple game. Or is he an aggressive type goaltender that's athletic and that can dive around and is quick or a challenging goalie? I don't know that he knows what he wants to be right now. And you know, it's unfortunate because I think his situation in St. Louis, having to battle with Brian Elliott for many years, now having to battle with Carter Hutton, it doesn't help the goaltender's confidence. It doesn't help the goaltender's psyche. He hasn't had a chance to just sit down and relax and say, okay, this is all I want to play. This is how I'm going to be successful for the long run. It's always been like, okay, well, let's see how the next game is, and then we'll see if you're going to play another one. So he goes in the game and does everything and anything in his power to try to win a game without really thinking about the consistency of it and, not just focusing on one game, but focusing on a 20-game period, maybe a 10-game period. So it's hard for Jake Allen, and it's funny because it always seems like Winnipeg is at the forefront of things with Jake Allen. Last year, he was told to stay home when the team went to Winnipeg. This year, they put him back in the net against the Jets when Carter Hutton has been playing a lot. He's going to remember the Winnipeg Jets, I think, for a long time because of it seems to always be against the Jets that more question arises than none.
Marty B. Ron covers the NHL for TSN, for RDS, and for MSG. He's a good friend of this program. Marty, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, guys. Have a good weekend.
Likewise, Marty, you too. When we come back, we discuss Bill Peters, Carolina Hurricanes head coach, and his negative comments towards his team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, I was really disappointed in our compete today. Just a disappointing effort. Disappointing preparation, disappointing effort, and we got what we deserved.
That was Carolina Hurricanes head coach Bill Peters. That was last Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, just after a defeat by the San Jose Sharks.
Super Bowl, by the way.
It was a great Super Bowl. The Carolina Hurricanes got a much-needed win.
Fly, Eagles, fly, Drew.
Are you done? Are you done?
Yep.
Okay. The Hurricanes got a much-needed win last night, defeating the AHL Vancouver Canucks by a 4-1 Ooh. Margin. Hey, it's not me saying it. That's Jacob Markstrom, Canucks goaltender, calling them a minor league team with their performance last night. So don't give me that ooh there, Dave Minuk.
A lot of coaches and players getting ornery.
Yeah, it's an ornery time of the year. And definitely Carolina Hurricanes head coach Bill Peters was one of those ornery guys, you know, really ripping his team for their performance over the last few games. It's surprising because this is a Carolina Hurricanes team that's, you know, right in the thick of things in the NHL's Eastern Conference playoff race. They're a point behind the Islanders. They have a game in hand on the Islanders. But he's certainly not pleased with the team, and they made some moves as a result of his displeasure. Marcus Kruger, who they brought over from the Chicago Blackhawks and signed to a contract, he was put on waivers, along with Josh Juris, who they brought over from the Calgary Flames. So some roster changes happening in the Carolina dressing room as a result of their poor performances as of late. You think Bill Peters is right, Ezzy, for calling out his team in the manner that he did? The second straight year he's done something like this. Last year, if you recall correctly, it was Eddie Lack who he went after for a poor performance.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised. I mean, he's trying to motivate his team. Bill Peters is a pretty animated guy. I think he's a heck of a hockey coach as well. You know, Drew, I did some research here for this segment, and for me, it's all about a lack of goal scoring for the Carolina Hurricanes. And, you know, for me, Sebastian Aho is the best player on this team, and he's only 20 years old. I mean, he's still, you know, only in his second year in the National Hockey League. But I have some numbers for you that might surprise you. Justin Williams scored last night. That was his first goal in the last six games. From December to mid-January, he went 14 games without a goal. Here are some more numbers for you. Jordan Staal, one goal in his last 11 games. Jeff Skinner, one goal in his last 11 games. Teuvo Teravainen doesn't have a goal in his last six games. He only has two goals in his last 15 games. So, I mean, there's a major lack of goal scoring on this team. And when you're talking about Jordan Staal and Jeff Skinner and Teuvo Teravainen, less so Justin Williams, but you're talking about, you know, the best players on your team. Sebastian Aho, for me, has really been the only consistent scorer for this team all year long. And you know, I look at this team and, you know, Scott Darling, you know, he hasn't worked out in net, and that's why Cam Ward has been getting the majority of the starts as of late. But for me, I mean, when you look at those players specifically, and I realize Jordan Staal has never been a 30-goal scorer in the National Hockey League, but when you're talking about Jeff Skinner and Teuvo Teravainen, I mean, these are highly skilled players. So it's very surprising, you know, with a lack of goal scoring, in my opinion.
Well, Jeff Skinner, you mentioned him and his struggles. He's now on the TSN trade bait board, the latest one that was published by Frank Saravelli on TSN.ca. You know, he's really had some struggles. He's never made the playoffs since he's been a member of the Carolina Hurricanes, which is sort of hard to believe because he's, and first of all, that it's his eighth year in the league is also sort of hard to believe. He came in when he was 18 years old and hasn't skipped a beat. He's only got 15 goals and 31 points. He's on pace for his lowest offensive output since 04-05. He had 37 goals last year. He's got the high-end skill and speed that teams covet. I'm now quoting Frank Saravelli's article. But and he has cost certainty at one more year at $5.725 million. But it does seem like things are coming to a head between Bill Peters, the Carolina Hurricanes, and Jeff Skinner in that his name has been bandied about.
Yeah, and, you know, Drew, you just mentioned it. I mean, the Hurricanes, along with the Rangers, along with the the Flyers, the Devils. I mean, they're right in the middle of a playoff race. So what are you? Are you a seller? Are you a buyer?
Mm-hmm.
I think when it comes to the Hurricanes, you're maybe both.
If somebody is going to make you a significant offer, you're probably listening.
I think you have to, if you're Ron Francis, you have to look at bringing someone in.
Well, they have the whole new ownership question, which is sort of surrounding them. Tom Dundon is their new head coach, and he's definitely been proactive in trying to, you know,
new owner,
yeah, trying to get the Hurricanes back to, I guess, to the previous heights that they had achieved when they won the Stanley Cup, which is, you know, going on now 15 or so years ago. It's a real interesting time in Carolina, and I think a lot of the people there, including general manager Ron Francis, are feeling some pressure because a lot of Ron Francis's moves as GM there in Carolina haven't worked out. You mentioned Scott Darling, that hasn't worked out. Marcus Kruger clearly hasn't worked out.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're talking about Marcus Kruger, I mean, he's a third line, fourth line guy, right? I mean, Marcus Kruger's not a guy they brought in thinking that he was going to score 25 goals or anything like that. He was a fourth liner for the Blackhawks. And sure, the Blackhawks are a deeper team, but...
They didn't expect to have to put him on waivers, though.
No. No, I agree with you, Drew. I didn't expect Kruger to be on waivers either. And, you know, Elias Lindholm is another guy. I think he's got one goal in his last 10 or 11 games. So, I mean... If you're Ron Francis, don't you have to look at maybe bringing in whoever? If it's a Mike Hoffman, Evander Kane, Rick Nash, I don't know who it is, but you're just not getting any goals right now from your top players.
You might need a bit of a jolt to the system of the Carolina Hurricanes. Here's more from Bill Peters. This is last Sunday after their loss to the San Jose Sharks.
Well, obviously, you know, we've got to talk about it, obviously. That wasn't a lot of fun, actually. And obviously, this group that's been together, this lineup's been together a little bit here now, so... Maybe there's some complacency there.
Does that lineup need to change?
It'll be different Tuesday. There's three healthy bodies. There's at least three that can go in. And if it's not those three, there's a group down in Charlotte too, right? So something they can't put that group out again after that. It's not acceptable. They let each other down too in the room. That's not right.
Some damning comments from Carolina Hurricanes head coach Bill Peters. They're feeling a little bit better about themselves last night having beat the Canucks, but they're up again tomorrow. Pardon me, tonight they have the Colorado Avalanche, so we'll see if the good feelings continue in Carolina. When we come back, Corey Pronman is going to join us from theathletic.com, talk a little bit about some Jets prospects and some prospects that are going to be participating in the 2018 Olympic Hockey Tournament. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday here on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, we're pleased to welcome to the program Corey Pronman. Corey covers the world of NHL prospects, draft-eligible prospects, really everything going on with the next wave of NHL superstars. Corey's your man for that. Corey, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Corey. Wanted to bring you on to talk about some of the Jets prospects. You know, recently, about a month ago, a little less than a month ago, on theathletic.com, you published your mid-season top 50 NHL prospects. Only one Jets prospect cracked your top 50, as Jack Roslovic had just graduated out from being eligible in your list. And that's, of course, 2017 first-round pick of the Jets, Christian Vesalainen. He's overseas playing in Finland in the Finnish Elite League. What has impressed you about Christian Vesalainen's first year in the Finnish Elite League?
Well, it's his second year, actually. He played there briefly last season with not so much success, but he's just been outstanding this season. He just scored two more goals today. He's been around a point per game right now in that league. And, you know, he's just showing dominant offensive ability versus men in a very good hockey league. He's a 6'3" forward who can skate and make offensive plays with his skill and finish off plays. He has the skill set that projects very well into the NHL. And we've seen him, he can dominate in slashes at the U18s last spring. He was absolutely dominant, and now in this league, he's starting to put it together a little more consistently. And, you know, I'm not sure if he's like a high-end playmaker, but I see a guy who just makes so many plays all over the ice and has the tools to project into a top-six forward in the NHL. And I think he's definitely a guy the Jets fans should be excited about.
Corey, Dylan Sandberg was the Jets' second-round pick in last year's draft. He was a standout for Hermantown High in the Minnesota High School League. He's playing for the University of Minnesota Duluth right now, just recently represented the USA at the World Junior Tournament in Buffalo. How would you assess his first year of college hockey, and what do you see his ceiling as at the NHL level?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, if someone just quickly looked up his stats and sees he had 6 points in 28 games, they think he's not having a very good season. But I think, if you've watched Duluth closely, you see a guy who's maybe not been dominant, but he's been fine, I think, a nice, fine two-way defenseman for a freshman. And then he had a fantastic World Juniors, I thought, on a very thin USA D-core. He was arguably one of their best defensemen throughout the entire tournament, and his minutes kept going up as the tournament went along. And I don't think he's going to be a huge points producer in the NHL, but I see a guy who's big, he can skate, he moves the puck fine, he's smart at both ends, he has a good shot. There's stuff there to like. I think, he's going to be in college for a few years. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I think he's going to be in a very important part of the next U.S. World Junior team. And I think, I don't have incredible optimism like with Vesalainen, but I do think he's a good prospect, and he's one of the better ones in the Jets system.
No, Corey, I think we've been talking about the 2015 Jets draft class for years, and I think we'll continue to talk about how impactful that draft will be for Winnipeg moving forward. You know, I have the benefit of watching six of the eight players, a lot of them with the Moose this season, but the one player we don't see a lot of is Eric Foley. So what would you tell Jets fans about Eric Foley, how he's played with Providence this season?
I think he's been good. Providence, he's been one of been the top scorer on that team. It's not a stacked team, but it's a fine team, and he shows that he has a nice skill set for a guy his size. He can make plays. He battles hard. I don't think he's a high end offensive guy. I don't think he's a projected top six forward in the NHL currently, but he could be a guy who projects into a reasonable third line, maybe forward, who can chip in at both ends of the rink. He's a nice player. He's definitely still on the NHL path. But I probably wouldn't have him, like I said, in the same tier as a guy like Vesalainen or Roslovic.
Corey Pronman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing some of the Winnipeg Jets prospects. Corey, of course, is with TheAthletic.com. Corey, answer this question. At the end of his playing career, Logan Stanley's ceiling will be as of a what defenseman?
Oh, boy. he's obviously a guy I'm sure you've all had a lot of conversations about.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough for me to say he's going to be a top four defenseman as it stands right now. And that's not what I say. I don't think he has positive attributes. I was talking to some OHL people about him over the last few weeks. I think he's played fine this season. He was one of the last cuts from the Canadian junior team. Talked to people around the Ontario Hockey League, and they don't like playing against him. He's a 6'7" defenseman. He's mean, and he's shown this season he can move the puck. He can be okay moving the puck, and there's some stuff to like there, but I just don't think there's enough skill and upside for him to be able to, play at the pace of a top four NHL defenseman as of right now. Maybe he gets onto a third pairing. I look at how Sam Morin in Philadelphia has been developing, and they are similar-ish players, and Morin is still struggling to crack the lineup in his third pro season, and I don't know if that's going to be Stanley's trajectory, but it's tough for me to say right now. He's a high level prospect.
Corey, another Jets prospect that we wanted to ask you about. I know you haven't seen him play a ton, but it's Mikael Berdan, goaltender, playing for the Sioux Falls Stampede. And I think everybody around the hockey world saw that celebration earlier this year when he scored an empty net goal and went pretty nuts there on the ice. What maybe has impressed you about his play in the limited viewings that you've had of Berdan?
Yeah, I live in a USHL city, so I've been able to see him briefly, like not a ton, and he was the third goalie for the Russian World Junior team, so he didn't really get into a ton of games. He didn't really play much there. He's a good athlete, 6'2". He moves around the crease well. He can make some high-level saves. I think there's still some tweaking in his overall game and his read that he needs to make. you know, he was a highly touted prospect when he was drafted when he was 17, back in 2016 draft. He's been good in the USHL. He's been a very nice goalie. I'm not sure he's a high end prospect right now, but he's definitely a guy they'll be monitoring. It'll be interesting to see where he goes next season.
Corey, I know you were at the AHL All-Star Game in Utica, and you had a chance to talk to Daniel Sprong. And, you know, I was interested to see his perspective on analytics and how he evaluates them. Now, are you finding, as you talk to more and more, especially the younger players, it's something that they're paying greater attention to?
I would say, you know, a little bit, yes. I think it was just a matter of fact that, you know, I think he grows up in that era where, you know, of course he stack is thrown at him, and it's not something that's new to him in a way that, you know, can kind of twist the way his worldview has been. It's just something that he kind of just knows exists when he was a young teenager, and just more information for them. So, you know, it's just a generational thing. It's no surprise that most people who are more stat savvy in the, say, the public writing world tend to be younger people. It's just easier to not have, you know, preconceived biases that you have to fight against. And, you know, Sprong is someone who, when I talked to him, he was fully embraced the concepts there. He uses it to help further his game, and I wouldn't be surprised if more teams and trainers are trying to use that with younger guys who might be more accepting with that.
Corey Pronman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Corey covers prospects for TheAthletic.com.
Corey, recently, earlier this week, in fact, you had a really good article talking about the NHL prospects to watch at the Olympics. And, you know, when you consider that Finland is going to have 2017 first-rounder Miro Heiskanen and Ellie Tolvanen, and then you consider that Sweden's going to have projected number one overall pick for the 2018 NHL draft, Rasmus Dahlin, are you surprised that, you know, Canada didn't try to bring in some prospects, whether that was going to be, you know, Jordan Kyrou or Cale Makar? Obviously, Cale Makar decided that he didn't want to represent Canada at the Olympics. But I guess, what are you expecting out of those players? And are you, again, a little bit surprised that maybe Canada didn't bring some 18- or 19-year-old prospects with them?
Well, Canada was looking at a couple of college players throughout the year. They had some older college guys, Dylan Secura, Chicago prospect, Jeremy Davies, a New Jersey prospect, Zach Whitecloud, who's undrafted. He's probably going to be a top college free agent. So they were looking at guys. I just think they thought some of the top juniors, like Jordan Kyrou, for example, wasn't going to probably fit into their player pool. And while they didn't have NHLers, Canada still has a pretty good array of players that they could have chosen from. In terms of Finland, I mean, and Sweden, it's going to be really fun to watch those guys. I mean, I'm probably not going to get up to 3 a.m. to watch those games, but I will definitely be checking out how those guys are doing, just because Tolvanen and Heiskanen have just been absolutely outstanding for 18-year-olds in Finland. Rasmus Dahlin, obviously, is a special guy. I don't need any more evidence that he's an elite prospect, but he'll be fun to watch regardless. You know, Tolvanen and Heiskanen are not only going to be playing on those teams, but I expect all three of those guys are going to, Tolvanen and Heiskanen and Dahlin, will be playing key roles for the respective teams, so that'll be interesting to watch. And on Russia, you have several guys who are either drafted NHL players, highly regarded prospects, or highly regarded free agents. And so I expect there's going to be a surprising amount of NHL people watching those, not Russia games, the OAR games.
You know, Corey, just, you know, one more question about Tolvanen. And when you see what he's doing right now for Jokerit Helsinki, are you surprised that he fell to 30th overall and Nashville looks like they might have a steal there?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously been, you know, a discussion point throughout the season is Tolvanen's draft slot, and I really liked him as a draft prospect. I had him top 10, but, you know, you have to look at everyone else's draft board to see what else they said. But I think, you know, he's shown some of the promise that I've seen in him throughout the last few years is that he has elite goal-scoring ability, elite offensive skills. He's not a big guy. He's not a great skater, and I think that's part of the reason why he slid. And we'll see how he does in the NHL and on the smaller ice surfaces if he can still play at that high-end level. But I see a guy with just, you know, with true high-end offensive abilities, and I think anyone would say they were would be a little surprised by how well he's done. I mean, he's been one, arguably the best 18-year-old KHL player ever. That would be surprising to me, even though I was a big fan of him, but I'm not surprised to say that he's looking like a top-end prospect.
Corey Pronman covers the world's of prospects for TheAthletic.com. Corey, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Yep, sure thing. Thank you.
Take care, Corey. When we come back, we discuss the struggles of the Columbus Blue Jackets. You might be surprised to find out just how poorly they've been playing since, I believe, it's December 1st. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's been that way for us most of the year here, and where things just haven't totally gone our way in games, and somehow we've got to have the wherewithal to keep finding ourselves, keep staying with it, and turn these games into wins and try to get on a run. I'm encouraged with the way we've played the past couple of nights, but we just found we've played well enough to lose. We got to try to turn that.
Columbus Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella. The Blue Jackets continue to struggle. You know, nobody really has been paying attention or talking about the Blue Jackets' struggles as of late. When they started the season 16-8-1, they were fourth overall in the NHL on November 30th. So you thought they were just picking up where they left off last year. They had their best regular season in club history last season. Of course, they, by virtue of the NHL's stupid playoff system, they ended up playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, and that didn't go so well for the Blue Jackets. But you think, okay, 16-8-1 in their first 25 games. They're going to be atop the Metropolitan Division. They're going to be one of the teams to beat in the Eastern Conference. Well, lo and behold, since December 1st, the Columbus Blue Jackets are 11-14-3, which is good enough for 26th overall in the NHL. And as of today, February the 10th, the Columbus Blue Jackets are no longer a playoff team. They lost 4-2 last night to the Washington Capitals. They're 2 points behind the New York Islanders for the second wild card spot.
And they also have two games in hand.
So. Two games in hand.
Yep.
How surprised are you about the struggles of the Columbus Blue Jackets since their very good start to the season, Ezzy?
Well, I go back to early October when I picked Columbus and Edmonton to go to the Stanley Cup Final. When I made that prediction,
kiss of death.
Am I just the jinx now? Is that what I am?
You might be. You might just be the kiss of death for any hockey team.
I think you
around.
Really wanted the Devils to get in, and you figured, okay, this is the best way.
It's unbelievable. No, I mean, you know, you just said it, Drew. I mean, those are the numbers. I mean, they have been well below 500 mm-hmm. since early December. And, you know, for me, Artemi Panarin, you know, he's had a good season, but I think the Columbus Blue Jackets expected more out of Artemi Panarin. And, you know, let's be honest, Sergei Bobrovsky, you know, he has a career year last year. And you know, he's been a good goaltender for the Blue Jackets over the last 4 or 5 years, but he hasn't been as good. And I'm not saying that, you know, Bobrovsky is having a bad year, but he certainly hasn't been as good as he was last
year. He's been an average NHL goaltender, I would suggest.
Yeah,
918 save percentage, 2.51 goals against average. That's pretty average.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, no, I definitely did not expect this from the Columbus Blue Jackets. I still think there's a really good chance that this team makes the playoffs, but, you know, they're in a dogfight right now with the Philadelphia Flyers, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Devils. We talked about it. The Rangers are still in the mix. I mean, there's 4 or 5 teams right now competing for those last 2 wildcard spots, Dave, right? I mean, the Florida Panthers, they won 4 games in a row previous to last night's loss. So, you know, the Panthers still have an outside shot at making the playoffs. But right now it looks like 5 teams from the Metro Division are going to make it. But, you know, John Tortorella, you know, he's tried, you know, to move some pieces around here and find the right mix. But they've been inconsistent since the early part of the season. And, you know, I certainly thought they would be competing for the Metropolitan Division, but right now they're competing for their playoff lives.
Yeah, they're battling 6 of their next 7 games, I guess 5 of their next 6 after they lost to the Capitals last night. 5 of their next 6 games are against Metropolitan Division teams, against their division rivals. So if things don't turn around quickly, as in, you know, now, this Columbus Blue Jackets team might be, you know, outside looking in. They've lost 4 in a row. They're 2-7-1 in their last 10. I mean, you can't afford to lose very many more games without it just being, you know, the death knell on your season.
Right, and it kind of reminds me, guys, a little bit of the Tampa Bay Lightning last year. And all you have to do is check out the Columbus Blue Jackets statistics, and pretty much across the board, you have players that aren't performing up to expectations, right? I mean, Josh Anderson, he's got 16 goals, but they expected more out of him after the contract that he signed. Zach Werenski, his offensive totals are way down.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a sophomore slump. Call it whatever you want. Alexander Wenberg, he's missed some time. They expected more out of him. He's only got 5 goals in 40 games. Cam Atkinson, I mean,
he had
35 goals last year? He's got 8 this year.
Yeah.
And
Nick Foligno.
He's been injured too. Nick Foligno isn't scoring.
Boone Jenner.
Brandon Dubinsky, I believe he's out of the lineup right now, but they certainly miss him. So, I mean, across the board, I mean, the Blue Jackets' numbers are way down. So, you know, it's going to be a real tough sledding here for them, you know, as they try to, you know, stay relevant here in the playoff race.
And it's interesting because their goal differential is minus 13 right now. And in the East, it's really, I mean, there's only 5 teams who have a positive goal differential, whereas in the West, it's 10. But it's the goal scoring. They're just not scoring enough goals. I mean, their defense, I think their goals against is the third best in the NHL, in the Eastern Conference, sorry. So you've got a team that's able to keep the puck out of the net for the most part, but they're like you just touched on, Ezzy, they're not getting a lot of goal scoring. So to me, that's what it seems like. They're not getting the contributions that they had last year. They're getting the goaltending, but they just can't put the puck in the net. So to me, that's probably the biggest question mark with this team is, what are you going to do in terms of are you going to be able to compete with those teams like Tampa, Boston, Toronto, that are able to, and Washington, even Pittsburgh, who can score, not necessarily at will, but can score a lot, and you just don't seem to have it this year. The guns aren't producing. So nice for Pierre-Luc Dubois, son of Eric Dubois, assistant coach of the Manitoba Moose. It's a father's trip, and he went and made the trip with the rest of the fathers in Columbus to Washington, so he got to see his son score a goal yesterday. But yeah, they're just overall, they're not scoring a lot. And that to me is the biggest problem in Columbus.
It's sort of a surprise, Ezzy, sorry I interrupted you there. It's sort of a surprise, you know, it's just bad vibes around the Blue Jackets all season. You have the report from Aaron Portsline, who's now with The Athletic and covers the Blue Jackets. And of course, he was the beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch for so many years. You know, he was talking about Brandon Dubinsky getting sent home from the road trip back in January, you know, because he had a potential career threat. Threatening injury, and he needed to leave the team immediately as they were on the road trip in Vegas, and then they come out and they refute the report. It just seems like there's bad voodoo, bad vibes surrounding this Blue Jackets team this season. That story is still a bizarre one that sort of has fallen by the wayside as the Blue Jackets continue to struggle.
Yeah, Dubinsky's back in the lineup now, by the way. He's been back for 5 games. I haven't watched the Blue Jackets a lot this year, admittedly. I've been too busy watching the Jets and Moose, of course, but you know, sure, Drew, it might be bad voodoo. I just don't think they're playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I have watched the Blue Jackets, which, as I mentioned, hasn't been a lot, obviously. I didn't realize Dubinsky was back. you know, but it doesn't look like the same team. And you know, Dave, you know, talked about the goal scoring, and I did too. But this was a top offensive team in the league last year, guys. And, you know, when you make that trade and you bring on Artemi Panarin, and he's leading the team in points, but, you know, he definitely can be better, and many players on this team can be better. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, Cam Atkinson was a healthy scratch earlier this year.
Yeah.
I mean, who expected a guy who scored 35 goals to be a healthy scratch this year? And don't get me wrong, I mean, Torts is not afraid to scratch anybody, and Atkinson hasn't been playing well, but, you know, we definitely didn't think that this team would be having trouble scoring goals, because as far as I'm concerned, Seth Jones is a top defenseman in the league, and Zach Werenski is also a great defenseman, but they've just been very inconsistent.
Yeah, it's a bizarre situation. Last year, they had 5 players who had more than 50 points in their lineup. They had balanced scoring. I mean, we saw them earlier in the year. If you remember way back in October, the Blue Jackets came to Bell MTS Place when they were playing good hockey, and they absolutely swamped the Jets. The Jets obviously were still struggling a little bit at that point in time, but you watched that Blue Jackets team back in October at the arena here, and you thought, well, that's a Stanley Cup looking team. That's a team that looks like they have everything you'd want, all the ingredients you'd want to make a lengthy playoff run. And since December 1st, it's just absolutely collapsed in Columbus. And I mean, it's hard. I mean, they certainly can make the playoffs still, but the way they've been playing, it's hard to think that they're obviously all of a sudden going to flip a switch and turn it around and get back to being a contender in the NHL's Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I agree with that. And having said that, I mean, there's a lot of hockey to be played here. They play the Devils tonight at home, and that's obviously one of the teams they're competing with for a playoff spot. And then you've got a back-to-back on the road against the Islanders and the Leafs, and the Leafs we know are a playoff team. The Islanders are in that last wild card spot right now, and then you've got Philly, Pittsburgh, the Devils again, Philly again. I mean, this is not an easy schedule coming up for the Blue Jackets, and you know, I'm looking at that roster, guys, and I think there's a good chance that Jarmo Kekäläinen makes a move, just because you know you need to add something here, I think, on this roster, because right now, as you said, they're middling.
Yeah, and Jack Johnson, of course, defenseman for the Blue Jackets, has requested a trade. He's hoping to be dealt before the trade deadline.
And also, you know, Drew, you wonder, you know, if that's having an impact on this team. I mean, Jack Johnson has been a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets for a long time now.
Sure, he was involved in the Jeff Carter trade, if I'm not mistaken, back when Carter was briefly a member of the Blue Jackets after they traded him from Philadelphia
and
before he went to Los Angeles.
Johnson's a key piece. I mean, I don't think he's, you know, the Blue Jackets' best defenseman. I mentioned earlier Seth Jones and Zach Werenski, I think, are the Blue Jackets' two best defensemen. But you wonder if that's had you know, a negative impact in the dressing room this year. And I have no idea, but I mean, you know, Jack Johnson requested a trade quite a long time ago. I think it was, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago?
It was, right before a Wednesday NHL This Week show, I think probably early in January, where he came out and said for his own personal financial well-being, he wasn't playing enough in Columbus. Could he be traded to a team that was going to use him more and potentially drive up his value ahead of next year, and as he's an unrestricted free agent? Because he's, of course, got the financial difficulties tied with his parents, which is a whole separate issue altogether. I mean, it's just a bizarre year, and has been a bizarre year since the end of November in Columbus, and you wonder if they can turn this thing around.
They have to be one of the most disappointing teams. I mean, I'd put the Oilers up there as well. I would put the Habs up there, but we should have known when I picked the Blue Jackets to go to the Stanley Cup Final, they weren't going to do anything this year.
That's absolutely right. Should make mention that the previous segment, of course, was brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You're making me hungry, man.
Well, it's almost lunchtime for you there, Big Daddy. If you're looking for a place to catch tomorrow afternoon's game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got some great food and drink specials. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's, or I guess as the case may be, hockey afternoon at Bernstein's tomorrow afternoon. When we come back, Jesse Doherty is going to join us. He covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. The Caps in town on Tuesday to face the Jets, the first time the Jets and the Capitals will have met this season. Jesse Doherty coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Washington Capitals make their first visit to Winnipeg, their first and only visit to Winnipeg, barring a Stanley Cup Finals series between these two teams. They're in town on Tuesday. Jesse Doherty covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. He joins us now on the line. Jesse, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. I got caught in the rain here in the car, so if you hear a little pitter-patter, sorry about that.
Well, I promise you, in Winnipeg on Tuesday, you won't have to worry about the rain. You might have to worry about some snow, but there certainly won't be any rain.
Or a blizzard.
or freezing to death, but there won't be any rain.
I'll say it sounds good, but it doesn't sound good at all.
Jesse obviously brought you on to talk about the Capitals, and, you know, it's sort of funny. When we talk around the league here on the program, and, of course, we're Jets-focused, but we certainly look around the NHL, we haven't spoken a lot about the Washington Capitals this season. They're sitting there atop the Metropolitan Division. They've been playing, you know, decent hockey for the last few months. They've sort of been comfortably atop the Metropolitan Division as of late. Yet, they're sort of flying under the radar when it comes to sort of the national stories in the NHL. Is this just a function now as we're used to them being atop the Eastern Conference? We're used to them atop the Metropolitan Division, but it's what have you done for me lately come the playoffs, and we know that they haven't done anything come the playoffs?
I think it's a lot of that. I think it's a really weird team this year. Like, I've thought a lot about this, and if someone asked me just sort of offhand, like, how would you characterize the Capitals? Like, I probably would The first thing that pops in my head would probably say, like, they're mediocre. And then you look at the standings, and you're like, but they're in first place and have a pretty comfortable cushion in a really competitive division. I don't think they're mediocre at all. They're sort of just what you'd expect, and I think that's why there's not a lot of flashy storylines around this team, because the guys driving the ship are Alex Ovechkin and Braden Holtby, and it's fairly cliche, but those are your two all-stars, and they're playing as such. And there are guys having down years. Nicholas Backstrom, TJ Oshie, guys who really could step it up and push his team to the next level. But I do think you're right. I think it's a kind of function of this team sort of being what it has been in the regular season. And until you get to the postseason and do better than you have been past that second round threshold, it's almost like, well, Caps, talk to us in May. They're not going to prove that much now. There's not much to prove because this team has done this year in and year out, so they're going to have to do it when it matters a lot more.
Jesse, it was announced earlier today the Capitals signed Lars Eller to a five-year deal. He's been their third-line center all year. Are you surprised that the Capitals announced the signing, or are they just trying to get a head start on the summer?
I'm surprised. I also think it's a great deal for the Caps. I think last year they left a lot of their signings to the summer, and it came back to hurt them. Just a small example of that is you probably been into free agency with Evgeny Kuznetsov having a lot of leverage. He had some KHL deals on the table. He had an opportunity to say he could test the market. You give him a lot of money, then you end up having to trade Marcus Johansson to the Devils because you can't go off cap space to sign him. So I think the Capitals maybe learned last year that this is a good time of year to get these deals done so you don't go into free agency with a player having a lot of leverage, because Eller's going to maintain his cap hit for 5 years now at $3.5 million. He's playing really well. He's been a fixture on the third line, and they don't have to pay him any more than they have been. So I think it's a really good deal for the Capitals, because you figure if he hits the open market, a team may value him as a second-line center, a bottom half team or a bottom third team. I don't know if he is a second-line center, but the way he's played, they may value him as such. So now the Capitals don't need to compete with the offers that would value him that high, and they can say, we're going to pay you as a third-line center, pay you a pretty good price at third-line center, and give you stability here for 5 years. And we just talked to him in practice, and that stability, staying somewhere for 5 years, he's a five-year-old daughter, is something that really attracted him. Especially kind of after his career moved around a bit at the beginning. So I think it's surprising, yes, but also just a really strong deal from a Capitals standpoint.
You know, Jesse, Andrei Burakovsky was sat again by the healthy scratch by Barry Trotz. What do you think is up with him? Why is he seeming to have such an inconsistent season this year?
It's so interesting with him. It's so game by game. It's sort of a mental game. Barry Trotz did say today he expects Andre to be back in the lineup tomorrow against the Red Wings at home. He didn't say where, kind of on what line, but he said he's expecting to play. Andre's shown in the last 3 years that one goal can just set him off on these pairs. Like, he'll go for five straight, or he'll go 9 goals in 11 games. But it's these dry spells just come way too often. He missed 20 games with a thumb injury to start this year. He's bouncing out of the lineup. He was sick after the bye week. It seems like it's just always been something. Every time he gets a little bit of a foothold, when he gets in the second line, when he gets next to Backstrom, when he gets the guys that maybe he could sort of produce with, it's Barry's just yanking him out of the lineup again and giving him his tough love as a young guy. He sort of rotated his tough love between Andrei Burakovsky and 21-year-old Jacob Vrana. Those two guys have sort of gotten a lot of that this year. He's saying he wants to wake them up, let them know that being in the lineup is a privilege, he's not a right. And it's interesting. It's something to follow because they're going to need him. They're going to need secondary scoring depth. And you have to think, if they really don't think he's going to provide it, they might seek it at the deadline. So I don't really know what's going on there. It's just the fact that, you know, Burakovsky's been way too streaky, and after getting a contract in the offseason, you kind of hope maybe that would be weeded out of this game, but apparently it hasn't been.
Jesse Doherty is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. The Capitals into Winnipeg on Tuesday night to meet the Jets at Bell MTS Place. Jesse, you know, we're used to Braden Holtby being atop the NHL when it comes to wins for a goalie, and he certainly is this year, tied second. But you look at his save percentage and you look at his goals against average, and they are decidedly average this year and sort of un-Holtby-like. You know, save percentage of 916, goals against average down at 2.74. You know, is it maybe a blessing in disguise for the Capitals that they're playing so well and Braden Holtby hasn't been Braden Holtby-esque as of late? And, you know, can you imagine this team if Holtby recaptures that sort of Vezina Trophy nominee performance that we've seen the last couple seasons?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that's a really interesting sort of subplot to this season. I think there's two facets to that answer. I think one is last two games he's been great. And he's given up two goals in each, but he's made 35 and 37 saves. Just Blue Jackets are a team that you guys know just throw so many pucks in the net and create so many chances, you know, some good, some not. But he really stepped up in these last two games for these back-to-back division wins. And then on the flip side of that, I do think that you're right. Statistically, he's not been Braden Holtby. He doesn't have the same numbers that he's had in past years. But if you kind of look at the Capitals' makeup, this is sort of expected. It's sort of a statistical regression because they're starting two true rookie defensemen. They lost four really good veteran blue liners in the offseason. And then they've also lost some really good forwards that sort of help with possession and possession of the puck. So they're giving up a lot more chances. I know there's obviously a lot of discussion around the league of what defines a high-danger chance, but, you know, some people would say they're giving up a lot more of those, too. So Holtby obviously is not a Holtby we've known, but bit of a tougher stretch this year because of the makeup of the team is so different. And right now, even talking to him, he sort of had to reset his brain into what he thinks is the bad performance from himself. He's really hard on himself, but sometimes he has to say, look, I might have given up two goals, which is unlike me, but I also, they had 25 chances that could have, you know, produced a scoring opportunity. So it's kind of a weird year for him because of how different the team is. It's the first time in this sort of three-year run that he's been really good, that the team is so drastically different. So I do think there's some truth to what you're saying, but also it's the makeup of the team. So I would say that while Holtby hasn't really regained that trophy form, he's also been failed them out a lot based on sort of the way the defense is played and the forwards not possessing as well as they have in years past. So I think there is two sides to that.
Jesse, we're a Winnipeg-based hockey show, of course, so we got to ask you about Madison Bowie, who hails from the Peg, former Kelowna Rocket. He spent the last couple of years with the Hershey Bears. I believe he's playing on the third pair there with Brooks Orpik. What have you thought of Madison Bowie's game this year?
This is not related to his game, but he's just a joy to cover. I don't know if you guys have intersected with him at all, but he's just the nicest kid, and it's just kind of a breath of fresh air to talk to him. I can't say that enough about him. But play-wise, I think he's been solid, obviously. He's held his spot in the lineup as in that third pair of Brooks Orpik. He's played regular minutes. They haven't dipped too much. They haven't squeezed him out of the rotation. I think you could see the Capitals make a move at the deadline for some blue-line assurance. That might squeeze him out come playoff time. But I think he's proven that he can be an NHL defenseman, and I think you've seen him start to take some more chances. He played a little safe this whole year. There was a game this past month. I can't pinpoint who it was against, but he hit Chandler Stephenson with a great stretch pass up the whole ice. And to me, it wasn't a play he maybe would have tried at the end of the year, just playing a bit more timid and trying to find his own. But now he's sort of taking his time, letting the game slow down a bit, surveying the ice. And that stretch pass, I mean, it was one small sliver of a game, but it went through three defensemen, and it was a beautiful play. And it seemed like his maturation was bottled into that one moment. That I talked to him the next day and said, hey, man, that, you know, stretch pass was pretty nice. And he looked at me and he was like, I know I have that in my game. I've just sort of been waiting to, you know, bring it out. So I think we haven't seen what he can do yet, but he has definitely proven that he has the potential here. And he's also still waiting for that first NHL goal. So that'll be pretty cool when he gets that.
You know, Jesse, last night the Capitals were able to score the first goal and they ended up winning the game. But as you detailed in the Washington Post, the 14 of the previous 17 games they were scored against to open the game. What is it about the Capitals, do you think, that's making them have these somewhat slow starts?
Yeah, I don't think it's something that anyone could definitely put their finger on. I do think that maybe there is some, and this is just really conjecture. I can't prove this at all, but I do think there is some sort of, they come out of the gate slow because this team has been so good over the past couple of years. And I think they sort of expect to be the better team in most matchups. So when you get a team coming in, and maybe it's Carolina, or maybe it's Columbus, or maybe it's Vegas, you know, that sort of is
is maybe a little bit more excited to play right away. I mean, I don't think the Caps would admit that. Like I said, it's not something you can quantify, but I think when you win so many games across the last 2 years in the regular season and you sort of come into this one with a lot of veterans than been here before, sometimes you just don't get up for a Tuesday night game or a Wednesday night game. And I think Barry Trotz said it the other day that sometimes they need that one goal to sort of wake them up. And they've proven that they can come back pretty easily. I think we had a stat in there that we toiled over that it's taken them an average of 5 minutes to score the game-tying goal, which is a pretty tight window. They don't let the team get ahead for too long. I just think there's some comfortability there that maybe need to wash out before the playoffs, and I think they will. This group knows that come playoff time, there's going to be heightened burden because of how this team hasn't really produced there. But I do think that there is just a level of sort of comfort that maybe hurts them early on, but then once they sort of snap out of that and get going, it's fine. I think it gets weeded out pretty quickly.
Jesse Doherty covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. Jesse, we'll let you go on this last question. Capitals obviously re-signed Lars Eller, as we referenced earlier in the interview. John Carlson remains the big unrestricted free agent who's up at season's end. Sounds like there hasn't been much progression there. Do you expect that to get done before July 1st, or do you think Carlson tests the market? And can the Capitals afford to lose him on their back end? He's such a driving force for the Caps.
Yeah, he's proven this year to be so invaluable. He's really shepherded along Christian Juice as a rookie. He's paired with him most of the time. He's playing a career-high ice time. He's among the best defense in the NHL in terms of points. I don't think the Caps can afford to lose him. I mean, I think if you let him walk, you're probably going to have to pay more money than you'd like for a guy who's not as good as him, because you're asking a guy to move cities. You're asking a guy to sort of take a flyer on you, whereas Jonathan here his whole career, you might be able to do what you did with Lars and offer that long-term stability and sort of get him maybe for a little bit less than you would get on the open market. I would expect them to get that deal done before July 1st. I do think that this deal with Lars is a good thing for the Carlson deal, because it doesn't cut into his pie too much. If you saw Lars go up to $4 million or a year on a cap hit, or maybe even 4.5, if he hit the open market, then it would have been tough to also balance that with the money they're going to give Carlson. But I think now that you've kept Lars's cap hit at 3.5, I think that shows that the Capitals are intending to give a lot of money to Carlson, and that plan is still intact. So I would say that if I had to guess now, and it is sort of a guessing game, that John will be signed before the July 1st deadline. I just think it's a matter of how much and sort of when they can get that deal done.
Jesse Doherty covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. Jesse, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you Tuesday in Winnipeg.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Jesse.
I hope Jesse has an umbrella for when he gets out of the car.
It sounds like there's a pretty good rainstorm happening in the U.S. nation's capital.
Yeah, a lot of pitter-patter in that interview.
A little pitter-patter.
Yeah.
When we come back, the Manitoba Moose, they pitter-pattered all over the Cleveland Monsters last night. We'll do a Manitoba Moose Week in Review. You guys are looking at me like, what the hell does that even mean, Drew? Up next, the Manitoba Moose Week in Review. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
11 of the first. Cormier and Smith at center. Cormier wins it back into his own end. The Moose defend the net to the left with goalie Eric Comrie. Here's Sammy Niku speeding out of the zone. Right wing Appleton gives it to Niku. Bottom of the near circle. He's centered to the far post and a shot and a goal. Moving left to right in front of the net. Patrice Cormier just as the penalty came to an end. Boy, again, the Moose executing with great precision to make a 3-on-2 into a 2-on-1 into a goal for Patrice Cormier at 14 seconds.
Manitoba Moose defenseman Sammy Niku absolutely on fire this week. The team as a whole doing pretty well this week with a 2-win, 1-loss, 1-shootout loss record over the last 4 games, going back to last Saturday when they won 5-1 in Milwaukee. Victory last night in Cleveland for the Manitoba Moose. One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list to performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Kelly Taylor in town. I don't know if you guys had the opportunity to hear Kelly yesterday afternoon.
I did.
On the Don Vito Roundtable.
Yeah, good Saskatchewan boy.
A good Saskatchewan boy, indeed. He's the best export from Saskatchewan since Pilsner. Kelly Taylor was
and my grandma. is from Saskatchewan.
And as his grandma.
Yep.
Kelly Taylor was on with Kevin O yesterday afternoon. He had them in stitches. He had a great couple sold-out shows yesterday at Rumors Comedy Club. Tickets available right now, rumorscomedyclub.com. Don't miss out on Kelly Taylor tonight, two shows. And then a special dirty show. A rare Sunday evening dirty show at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
When are we going to have the Illegal Curve dirty show, Drew?
I assume once we get canceled, we'll do that show. It'll just be us screaming at each other and swearing.
I'm wearing dirty socks right now.
I assume you're usually dirty. Just unclean, generally.
No, I showered this morning.
That's good. We're always very proud
of you. I
got
to tell you, though, I went to bed pretty late. I did the post-game show, and that was a rough wake-up. That was like one of those showers where you're thinking that the shower is going to wake you up,
and
it didn't work today.
And Naomi's not around, so you have to actually wake yourself up.
Yep.
And
I had like four different alarm clocks set. Going. Yeah.
You know, a whole cuckoo clock going out.
Yep.
Anyways, let's move to the Manitoba Moose, who had a decent week, as I mentioned. Davis, let's start with Sammy Nuku, because this is his first pro year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 8 points now in his last five games, which is terrific. Never mind the fact that he's a rookie AHL defenseman. You watch the Moose more than anyone, Dave. Sammy Nuku has just been an absolute revelation. And, you know, this last week of games is really just sort of putting the icing on the cake for what's been a very impressive rookie season for Sammy Nuku.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, Drew, it's his first professional season in North America. He's been very good for the Moose. I think his offensive game is unbelievable. I mean, we saw it was illustrated really by that goal off the top that you played. I mean, he just set that play up from the Moose zone, and he just got the wheels going. And he's such a smooth skater. It's phenomenal to watch. And his vision is really good. He's got a good slap shot. His passing ability is very high. He's just got a very high hockey IQ. He just doesn't make a lot of errors with the puck. So no, he's Sammy Nuku's having a phenomenal season for the Moose, and it's really not being overshadowed. But you know, I think that people get a little bit overexcited about it because they're like, well, should he be called up? Now, my feeling is there's aspects of his game that he needs to work on, mostly in the defensive zone. And again, that's not to say that they can't happen, but I just think we live in such a society that's instant gratification, and you need these guys to develop. And we used to be, whereas defensemen would take years to develop, and it was understood that it would take a little bit longer for them to develop. Now it's, you see him playing in the lineup this year. I don't personally. I mean, maybe he gets a call for one game if they need to, but to me, there's absolutely no value in calling Sammy Nuku up to the Jets. I think you let him play the huge minutes that he's playing with the Manitoba Moose. It's the argument I make for all these players, because it's the truth. The fact is that they get opportunities they're not going to get in the NHL. So a guy like Sammy Nuku plays power play, can play penalty kill, he plays 5-on-5, gets all the big minutes. Why wouldn't you want your prospect to have that?
This is a bit of a random question, but is Sammy Nuku the shortest name in Moose history? 8 letters?
That's a very good question.
It's not. It's a question of a crazy person.
Well, no, it's a valid question, because I suspect the reason as he's asking the question is because...
By the way, what Drew said is not incorrect.
Nick Patan has 8 letters in his name.
Wow, you pulled that one out pretty quick.
Well, I mean...
He's definitely looking at the lineup.
J.C. LaPon has 7 letters in his name.
Yeah, but it's Nicholas Patan.
Well, what about J.C. LaPon? He's got 7 letters.
J.C.'s short for him.
He's short for...
Well, yeah. Do you know that Sammy's not short for something else?
Well,
no, it's not short for anything.
Somewhat irrelevant.
Unless it's short for Samuel.
Well, it could be.
I assume Desi...
It would be odd that he would be Finnish and his name would be Samuel.
Yeah.
Anyways, keep going, Dave, and pretend that as he didn't ask that question.
No, I just think what he's been able to do with the Moose this season has been eye-opening. I mean, remember, this is a 7th-round pick from 2015. And again, I talked about it with Corey Prom, and this is a draft class that really will define the Winnipeg Jets organization for years to come. I mean, again, we always know the Kyle Connor, the Jack Rozovics, but it's the Mason Appletons, the Sammy Nikus, those prospects who, again, in my mind, need time to develop. People are like, oh, Mason Appleton, you know, he's right now he's second in the AHL in scoring. You know, he's leading the rookie scoring race, and he's second in the AHL race right now. Do you want to call him up? And to me, again, it's a function of no, because I just don't think that he will gain from the experience, other than what they did with Rozovic. You know, you give him that opportunity, the one game, maybe, but to me, it's leave him in the AHL, let him continue to do the things that he's doing. Because, again, when you're in the AHL, if you make an error, right, because don't get me wrong, winning is important. Professional athlete's ever going to say it's not about winning. Of course, winning is important. But at the same time, if you make an error, it's not as critical as it is in the National Hockey League. So I think that these players, don't get me wrong, they're obviously not living their lives with the idea that they are going to make mistakes, but I think that they know that there's a little more flexibility for them to be able to make an error and correct it.
And Dave, it's been well documented what Mason Appleton and Jack Roslovic have done for the Moose in the American Hockey League. And, you know, we've talked about Sammy Niku. You know, for me, you know, what is probably the most impressive on this Moose team is the defense. And another guy who I know you've watched a lot this year is Cameron Schilling, right? Having, you know, an 8-year American Hockey League veteran on the team, and he's played really well this year. And when they've had Tucker Poolman in the lineup, I mean, Peter Stojkovic is having his best pro career this year. So, I mean, that's just as big of a story for me on this Moose team. And, you know, you got to give, you know, Chevy and Zinger a lot of credit. You know, they bring in Buddy Robinson. They bring in Michael Scarbosa. We talked about Patrice Cormier. He's having an excellent year. I think he's up to 19 goals, if I'm not mistaken, yep, on the year, Dave. So, I mean, these guys have given the Moose so much depth. And even when you have guys like Brendan Lemieux and Nick Petan in the lineup, they're still winning.
Well, Dave, let me ask you this. No Jack Roslovic, no Brendan Lemieux, no Nick Petan. They're all with the Jets. No Eric Comrie, no Michael Hutchinson. You can even throw Tucker Poolman into that equation right now. Jamie Phillips is the Moose goaltender for the foreseeable future.
This Moose team is a serious contender for the Calder Cup.
Can they continue to play at this level, Dave, without all those regulars in their lineup?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got enough veteran presence, I think, plus young skill to continue doing what they're doing. Jamie Phillips is a good goaltender. He was solid last night, picked up his first win in a while. I think this is a Moose team that I'm with Ezzy, especially once the Jets get healthy and we see what happens with the guys that they send down. But a number of these guys are having career seasons, like as just touched on. Cam Schilling didn't play last night. I'm not sure why, but Cam Schilling has the most assists he's ever picked up. Buddy Robinson's hit new career highs in goals and, you know, points overall. Patrice Cormier is having a career season. So I think all of these players are contributing, especially a lot of the veterans are almost having a rebirth with the Manitoba Moose. So there's a lot of excitement with the Jets Farm Club right now.
That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests, Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post, Corey Pronman of TheAthletic.com. We had Marty B. Ron with us as well, Dave Maloney, New York Rangers radio analyst, and way back in hour number one, Murat Attash of The Athletic here in Winnipeg. In case you missed any of the show, it's going to be available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to Jesse doing a great job behind the board producing the show. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.